Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am joined by author Sarah A. Bailey. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sarah fell in love with reading as a child. She quickly learned that books can take her to all the places she's always dreamed of going and allow her to live endless lifetimes in the one she was given. Sarah believes that a good fluffy romance novel can make even the darkest days a little brighter, and the kind of love stories that make even the skeptics believe in all that cheesy stuff like soulmates. She hopes to produce stories that readers can pick up and, regardless of what's weighing them down in life, feel a little lighter when they finish. Sarah was born in California and raised in Southern Oregon and still considers herself a Pacific Northwest gal at heart, right down to being a coffee snob, adamantly believing in Sasquatch. I'll come back to that. And feeling like a rain-drenched forest or a form of therapy. Sarah now resides in North Carolina with her husband, Mike. Another Mike, and their dog baby Rue. When she's not writing, she's likely reading, and if she's not reading, odds are she's searching out a decent cup of coffee on a rainy pine forest. Okay, so that's funny. So my husband's name is Mike, but I refer to him as Michael. And Becky, who does the podcast with me, she started it. Her husband is also named Mike. But the funny thing is, she was telling her Mike a story about my Mike, and she couldn't remember my Mike's name.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
But also, my husband is obsessed with Sasquatch. Like, we have a Bigfoot, like, cutout, like a metal cutout of Bigfoot that we have, like, leaning. Actually, I'm not sure where it's at. I don't even know if it's at this house yet, but we have one because he loves it.
That's so funny. Yeah. Where are you from?
We live outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay. That's hilarious. We love Bigfoot. In Oregon, where we grew up, there's actually like a hiking trail that leads up to back in like the 60s. You know the really famous Bigfoot like footage?
Yes.
That was taken in like Humboldt County in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
We live just over, or we used to live, like we grew up just over the border
super
in
close.
Southern Oregon. So out in like Applegate Valley is what it's called. They put Bigfoot traps in the forest to try and catch Bigfoot. So there's like a hiking trail you can take, and there's just this like old wooden cage the middle of the woods that they put to try to catch a Bigfoot, and it's still there. So you can like go hike to it and stuff. We used to do that as kids.
That's so crazy. Yeah, he has this weird obsession of, I'm like, I don't know if I believe in that. He's like, do you believe in ghosts? I'm like, well, I don't know. I've never seen one, so I don't know if they're real. He's like, exactly. I'm like,
right. Like my dad, I used to be like afraid of Bigfoot, and I remember camping once as a kid, and my dad, who grew up like near Burney, California, and spent a lot of time camping, he's like a hunter, all of that stuff, and he's like, I have spent so much time in these woods, if there was a Bigfoot I would have seen it.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, as an adult, I obviously understand that it's not real, but like, I just love the idea of it.
But is it though? I mean, you never know. So we live where we're at. Like I said, we're outside of Pittsburgh. But so when there was all those Bigfoot sightings in like Ravenna, Ohio, I mean, that's not that far from us. And so my husband was like, maybe they'll come here. I'm like, oh my gosh, just stop. But anyway, this interview is not about Bigfoot. So as a lifelong reader, what drew you to romance as a genre?
Yeah, I didn't, actually, it's so funny. I didn't grow, I mean, what kid like grows up reading romance, I guess, but like,
I mean,
I wasn't
I started
a big,
at like 12, so.
I wasn't a big, I don't know. I mean, I guess like I loved Twilight and I did in high school, which they're not really romance, but I guess they kind of have like the romance themes, but I loved John Green novels.
Okay.
Like,
yes,
loved
he has
them.
Some
Like,
really
Looking
great
for
stories.
Alaska. Was one of like my favorite books ever. So I read a lot of that stuff. I've always loved like the kind of like the contemporary, and I loved a lot of the young adult stuff, like To All the Boys I've loved before. That's one of my favorite series ever. Which I guess that's very romance forward. So I loved a lot of that stuff. But then actually when I got into like college, I read mostly like fantasy and not even like romanticy. Like I read like all the Game of Thrones books and like stuff like that, kind
Like
of like the high
hardcore
fantasy.
fantasy.
Yes. And then I got pretty into kind of like literary fiction or like speculative fiction, and
Okay.
I went through that kind of phase. But what really got me into like adult contemporary romance, you know, I've always loved like YA, but what really got me into like adult romance was I funny enough, I took a trip to Italy
Okay.
to visit a friend, and I ended up getting COVID while I was
Oh.
there. So I had to quarantine by myself. She did not get COVID and I did. So I had to go get my own Airbnb and I had to quarantine for 10 days by myself. And during that time, I mean, I didn't even have my laptop with me. Like I didn't bring anything. I had no Netflix, nothing. So I was like watching movies on my phone, and then she brought me over like a stack of books
Okay.
that she had, and two of the ones that she had It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover, and then she had Beach Read by Emily Henry,
Okay.
and I ate them up. And then I had a Kindle Unlimited subscription, so then I just started downloading
Anything you
romance
could
books on
find.
KU, and it was like literally what kept me going during that quarantine until I could get home. And then after that, it just like really never stopped. And I wrote before this all happened. Like
Okay.
I did write. I wasn't published or anything, but I wrote, you know, kind of as like a hobby. And I had never really had a story that I felt like so compelled to like write from start to finish.
Okay.
And it was once I started just devouring those romance books, I realized that that's what I wanted to write too. And then that was the first time I was actually able to finish a book.
So, what made you publish that first book that you finished?
Honestly, I finished it, and I, you know, during I'm such like a I love to like daydream. I'm very much like a dreamer, a very like visual, like, you know, optimistic, delusional person, really.
Okay.
And the whole time that I was writing it, I just started visualizing like what it would be like if I was like a real author and I did have published books and I was on shelves at bookstores. And until I really dove into the store to my debut novel, I had never thought, like, I did write, but I would go to the bookstore and I didn't think. I didn't, like, it was kind of like when someone says that, like, you know, when little kids are like, I want to be an astronaut, and in the back of your head you're kind of like, who's an astronaut? Like, that's not a real, like, it is a real thing that people are, but you're just like, that's not like a real thing. That's how I felt authors were. I was like, they're not real. Like, you know what I mean? It just seemed like such an unattainable thing. It was just kind of something you pushed into the back of your head. And but I you know, as I started writing my debut, I was like, well, what if? Like, what? And I just started asking myself, what if? And then once I finished the book, I had had all of these kind of like dreams and all of these thoughts, and then I also was staring at this completed manuscript, and I was like, this can't be for nothing. This can't just be for me.
Right.
Like, it's gotta be for someone else too. And then that's when I was like, all right, I have to publish it. Like, I have to, this has to like mean something bigger, you know, or I wouldn't have finished writing it. And so that's what kind of pushed me to publish.
Well, it's funny you mentioned like DeLulu Land and things like that. So like my kids and I, I'll buy a lottery ticket every once in a while, like when it's really high. And like then we talk about like they'll ask for ridiculous things. And it's like, if we win the lottery, I can do that. And my husband, the one day, he's like, you know, you're never gonna win. And we're like, do not kill our fun. Like, we understand that it is like a very, very, very slim chance, but it could happen. I mean, I don't play very often, so it's not like it could happen like often, but I'm like, it could happen. So that's why we always say, if we win the lottery. So.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just, and then it was, you know, my husband, I was so passionate about it, and he really like started deep diving, and he was like reading all these blogs and all of these articles and doing all this research on like how to self-publish and how to publish a book and how to find an agent. And he was like, you can do this. Like, you can do this. It's not impossible. And he really kind of like spoke it into this like existence and this like attainable, achievable thing. And he was the one that was like, no, like we can do this. We can figure this out. And he really helped me kind of just figuring out, like, because I used to sit there and I would be like, okay, I have a Word document, but how do you get it to be like a book size? And how do you get it bound? Like, I didn't understand how any of that worked. And I wasn't on social media. I didn't have a Bookstagram. I wasn't a Bookstagrammer. I didn't have TikTok. I didn't do anything like that. So, like, I was not even seeing what other authors were doing or what that process looked like. I didn't know anything. And he did a whole bunch of research and helped me figure it out.
That's amazing that you have that support system, though, because there many authors have that and they're fortunate, but there are a lot of authors out there that they don't have that and they're a one person machine. And honestly, publishing a book, self-publishing at that is like you are a machine and there are so many cogs and pieces that people are not aware of like going into it. Like and just you're right, just taking that Word document and formatting into a book itself. Like that takes some time and effort. And if you don't know what you're doing, I mean, it's rough sometimes. It is a wild world. So when you are writing your stories, do you plot them out and have a plan going through it, or are you a pantser and just kind of fly by the seat of your pants, so to speak, and just let the characters speak to you?
I've done both. When I was independently published and self-published, I definitely was more of a pantser because I would give myself, like, I would not allow myself to publish more than two books in a year, and I would not allow myself to set a release date until I had a manuscript finished.
I think that's a
So I was,
wonderful plan.
it gave me a lot of leniency to let the story come to me and let the characters come to me and kind of form themselves, and I could write as slow as I wanted to. Now that I'm traditionally published, my deadlines and my release dates are determined years ahead of time. So I don't have that freedom really anymore.
Well, and you have to
And
turn it
so
in like so much more in advance than your actual
much farther
publish
advanced.
date.
And you have to like pitch to get the book deal. So it's like for Celestia Cove, the series I'm working on now, I had to write out the synopsis for not just Tattered Tides, but for all four books in the series before I got the deal. So I already kind of had to know at least like
A
what
thought,
direction the book was
yes.
going in, who the characters were, the overarching plot, and I had to get all of that in. And so I actually worked on that like over a year ago. And then so now that I have that, I do an outline for every book and I do outline by chapter. And I don't like I don't follow the outline super closely. Like I will let myself kind of deviate
But it
and let the
gives you an idea
characters.
of like where you want the story to go, what you want the characters to do. And then if like as you're writing, you're like, oh, I hate this. I'm gonna like take a sharp left.
And it keeps me on track too because I do have deadlines that I have to stay on top of and that kind of thing. So it just kind of helps me keep like the direction that I'm moving in. And if I do decide to deviate like in a major way, I redo the whole outline from that point, whatever point I'm like, all right, I'm changing this. I then change the whole outline because I have to be able to like keep in the right direction. It's just what keeps me on track.
I tell every author that I do these interviews with, I love these so much because every single author, like the finished product is the same. Like it is a finished book that is published, but point A to point B is so different for everybody. And I love it.
And it's different for every book too. Like one the second book I ever wrote kind of came to me in like a fever dream. I had like a week off over the holidays, from my corporate job, and I was off work for like a week, and I didn't have anything going on, and that one came to me in like a fever dream, and I wrote the whole first draft in about 6 days, and it was like 60,000 words. I was writing like 10,000 words a day
But
for an
when those
entire
words come
week.
to you, you have to get them out.
And so that book just like was there and just like existed. And then I tabled it for like almost a year because I didn't release it until the next holiday season. So it sat for probably 8 or 9 months. I went back to it. I added about 20,000 words and then I published it. So, and that was one that just like really like just came to me like fully, like it was just there and I had to write it out. But I've not had that, unfortunately, not had that experience since. I've never written something so quickly since then. But so every book is different. I mean, like some books come to me and they're very clear. The plot is very clear. And I really don't deviate from my outline at all. And then I have other ones where I like literally throw the whole outline out and start over. So it just, every book is different for me too.
So do you have any like ways that you get set up to write? Like you said, you have a corporate job, so naturally you're writing around your day job. Like, do you have any like things that like you set up like that get you in writer mode? Like I did an interview with an author. Can't think of who it is off the top of my head because I have done a lot of these, but she likes to put on a tiara like when she's writing. And she like, but when she, that goes on her head, it like flips the switch and she's in writer mode. Like, I haven't, there was another one who like she like lights incense and like things like that. And it's like certain smells are really what get her focused.
That smell is a big thing for me. I don't have my corporate job anymore. I do write full time
Okay.
now. So it does look a little bit different. Back when I first started writing, I worked remotely, but I was on the East Coast.
Okay.
And I worked for a company on the West Coast. So my
Okay.
work schedule was 11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Oh,
because that
geez.
was 9 to 5 for them. But
Right.
it worked out great because I would wake up. I've always been an early riser. Like, no matter what time I go to bed, I cannot sleep past 7 o'clock. Like, I just can't. I could go to bed at 2 a.m. I'm still gonna wake up at 7. And so I would wake up in the morning and I would do my like morning routine, and then I would sit down at my computer at like 8 a.m. and I would write for 3 hours, and
Okay.
then I would work. And then I moved back to the West Coast. So then
Okay.
my work schedule became a normal 9 to 5. That was much harder to adjust to because I didn't like what writing that early in the morning. And so I was mostly writing at night and on weekends. Now that I do author full time, I have noticed that most of my inspiration comes to me at night.
Okay.
So I do typically spend, I'm still a morning person, I'm still an early riser. So typically my mornings are when I do things like this. Just before this, like I 7:30 this morning had a call with my publisher. Like,
Right.
I was on the phone
So
with
you get
them for
all
an
like
hour
the
and a half.
business side of it out of the way, like in
Yes.
the morning, and then you can focus on the creative
Yep. The
side.
social media, the marketing, the meetings, the planning, all of that stuff. And then I typically take a break in the afternoon. That's when I have like my downtime. And then in the evenings around like 5 o'clock, I'll start writing, and I'll typically write until like 10, 9 or 10. And then, I get ready for bed and stuff. So, yeah, I do most of my writing in the evenings now. If I don't have anything on my calendar, then I will write just like whenever I feel like it. I do scent is a big thing for me. So if I am writing at home, I have like my candle warmer, and I'll kind of swap those out depending on like what the mood is or what book I'm writing. I have to have like dr so like I have to have like my office space has to be like pretty clean, and kind of like organized. And then I have to have the right kind of lighting. So like I like to put on like my little lamps. And then I really, really love having like a snack nearby. And I normally don't eat while I write, but it's like I want to
You
like
have
in
the
my head,
option.
yeah, I like knowing that like I don't have to get up. Like I don't want to like get up at all. So like I'll have my drinks, I'll have my snack, I'm good to go. But I also really like writing outside of the house, and I actually feel like that's typically a lot more productive for me. So I do love going to like a coffee shop. I love Panera Bread. I pay for the Sips subscription, so I get the free drinks. And I'll go to Panera Bread probably like 2 times a week and just sit there and write because I get like free coffee. So I'll just go into Panera Bread like, and I'll just sit there for like hours
Well, but
and
it
write
like
Panera Bread.
changes your environment. Like you have like this mental like side to it. Like I'm in Panera, I'm there to work and drink coffee. Like there's such a like
It's
a scent like memory type thing and like scent like adjustment.
Yeah, and I have like ADHD, so it's when I'm at home sometimes it's like I said, like I do have to have my space like pretty clean, but I do feel like I have trouble focusing. And when I'm at home, I'll be like, is my dog making noise? And like, when's the last time I took her out? Does she need to go to the bathroom? Does she want something?
Well, and you
I'm really
think of all
hyper focused
those,
on
you think of all those little
her.
things, like, did I do this?
Yes.
Like, did I turn
Yeah.
this off before I sat
And like,
down?
should I go change out the laundry or should I not? Like, is it okay? Like, and it's just like, and sometimes when you're at home, even when I'm like shut in my office, because I obviously work from home, it's like I'll be like, well, like I could be doing the dishes right now, or I should probably make my bed. And then it's like I'll start
You
just
start to
doing these other
spiral.
things. And yeah. And so getting out of the house, it's like I don't have to actually, it's actually not my problem if Panera Bread is clean. So I can just sit there and write.
Well, and also like you're not in like the area that you're thinking about. Like you're outside of it. It's like you can think about if the washer has clothes in it, but nobody, you can't walk downstairs or like across, like down the hall to fix it. So it really doesn't matter. So when you're writing, how do you manage to keep the story element and the romantic element important, but so one does not overtake the other?
I feel like I really try to flesh out who my characters are as individuals and what journey they're trying to overcome or what they're trying to conquer in their story. I think like Tattered Tides is a really good example of this, is like you do see both Weston and Willow have a lot going on personally and a lot that they have to overcome and heal from. And then I want the romance to guide them through that without taking it over. I'm a really big believer in the idea that like you cannot effectively love another person if you do not love yourself. And I think that like I'm not saying that you have to be like totally healed to be in a relationship or to fall in love, but I think that you have to be like working on that. Like if you have demons, if you have unresolved trauma, you have to like be aware of it and you have to be working on it actively to be in a place where you can romantically like nurture like love. And so I go into every book with that mindset. And so I'm like, what is it that they have to overcome to be able to effectively nurture the relationship that they're going to inevitably end up having? And I feel like that really helps me keep the balance. And when I look at things like as I'm building a plot and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have this forced proximity or I'm going to have this scene where this thing happens, but it's going to lead them to having this deeper conversation where they're now addressing the things that they need to overcome individually and they're forming that connection. And all of it has to like snowball and kind of be connected in that way, to have them healing and then falling in love like at the same time. So I just try to keep that foot, like I do try to really flesh out who they are as individuals first. I need to know like what is their backstory, what is it that they're, what is their personal journey, that's beyond just the romance, and how is the romance going to push them into becoming the best version of themselves.
So let's talk Tattered Ties. It came out May 5th, 2026. So it is a new release. It is the second generation of this world that you created. And it's the story of Weston and Willow, like you said. And now these two, like Weston has some past traumas that he is continuing to work with and work around and heal from. 'Cause I mean, trauma in itself, like you never, it's always there. It's always your past. It is like how you treat it in the future type of thing. And Willow, like her trauma is, it's new, but no less, like no less, like really, there's nothing more to say that. And, but it's very interesting the way that you treated it, which I'm not going to tell you what that one is, but I thought it was very brave of you to make that decision.
I was I knew I knew going into it that it was going to be something that was going to be controversial to some people and ultimately to like turn off some people. But the thing is, I just think it's like it's so important. It's so much more common than we think or than we are willing to acknowledge, honestly. And I just think that it needs a voice. Like it just really does. And it needs a voice in a way that's like it was impactful to the story because it's impactful to Willow, but not in the way that it's like this jarring plot twist, shocking, oh my God. Like I didn't want to do it that way because it is common and it is something that just like needs to be given a voice without being this like scarlet letter, like oh my God, like kind of thing.
Well, and I think the way that you presented the trauma, presented what happened, presented the decision, like it makes sense. And it's like that is, it's a very personal decision, and I have a hard time when people make that decision for other people. But it's one of those things where like There was support, there was care, there was thought. Like, it wasn't like this decision was made without any. I'm trying to think of the word that I want. She made the decision, but based it on like how it would affect the people around her, how she personally would feel if she went a different direction. And for her, like the way in which the thing happened, which it sounds so vague when I'm saying this, but you guys, like, I can't tell you what it is. But it's one of those things where, like, would her trauma have been worse if she didn't make the decision that she did?
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of like the way that I kind of decided to go about it came from the first generation, the
Okay.
Pacific Shore series. In a much like lighter note, I really started thinking about the second book in Pacific Shore's Book in a Wildflower, which is about Everett and Dahlia,
Okay.
who are Willow's like aunt and uncle. Everett's bisexual, and when I decided like I didn't decide that. He decided, well, he didn't decide that. He just is.
Okay.
But when I realized that he
Yes.
was bisexual, I wanted to kind of craft it in a way where it's just like, this is just him and nobody's giving him shit about it and everybody in his life has accepted it. And I understand that that's not as like shocking or dramatic maybe, but I really wanted to craft a family and an environment because there's so many of us in real life who are bisexual and have never come out to our parents or haven't really strained the relationship or have been shamed for that or have been minimized for it. Being a bisexual woman married to a man is like, you're just like people just, you're an attention seeker, you're faking it, you're lying, like whatever. It's so minimized. And I just wanted readers to be able to have if they hold that identity, I wanted them to have a place to go where like the acceptance of it was never going to be questioned and they could feel safe with the family just like the character was. So then when Willow's story came to me, I said I wanted that exact same thing. She's not going to be afraid to tell her parents. Nobody is going to shame her. And nobody in her family is going to shame her. They're going to be unconditionally supportive. She's not going to hide it from anyone. It's not going to be this like controversial elephant in the room, secretive thing. She gets to just be honest and just be safe. And I get that that's maybe not realistic for a
But
lot
I
of people,
think,
but that's kind of the point. I want them to feel safe here. While still, it's very real, it's very raw. Her feelings around it, I think, are super common. And I think I wanted to show that even when you have every single support system, you're still allowed to feel scared, to feel bad, to feel sad, to grieve. Like you're allowed to have all of those feelings. And then even when you have the people in your life that are uplifting you, and I just wanted readers who have been through something similar, because a lot of us have, I wanted them to be able to feel safe there because there's a good chance that they haven't felt safe in real life
Well, safe
and
or
they
even
deserve to feel safe
seen.
here. Right, that too. Or even and that's the, when I chose to represent her trauma exactly what happens to her exactly the way it does is because I do feel like a lot of us have a similar story or have gone through like a similar thing and it gets minimized because there's always that element of like, well, it could have been worse, or it's worse for other people, or at least this thing didn't happen, or whatever. And I didn't want to minimize that. I didn't need it to be the most horrible, gruesome, shocking thing in the whole world because that doesn't minimize the way that she feels about what happened to her, or the decisions that she makes because of it, or the way that she goes about healing. So that it was all very, very intentional.
No, but I think that you treated it with a care and that not everybody would expect. But so Weston, like he too is a ball of trauma. But his, I mean, his is very different. Like he had a rough upbringing. We find out like why he went to jail and the reasons behind that. And again, I'm not going to spoil that because we find out the specifics of that a little bit later in the book. And it's again, it's one of those things you need to read it. But it's one of those items where it's like you don't blame him at all. Like when you find out what happened and like you learn more about his upbringing and the reason he has these aversions to touch and the reasons he has a hard time really feeling loved by his like adoptive family and those types of things. It's like it makes sense, but it's like they continue to show up. Like they see him and they see the fact that like he does not believe them, but they show up and the people around them continue to show up. And when he goes to the house to train with Leo, who has a book in the first series and is Willow's dad, like he lays out some rules, but the reason for the rules make a lot of sense. But Weston, like as like his journey goes, like he like slowly recognizes it's the little things that all of these people in his world do, like that is how they care. And he finally like he learns to accept that.
And I think I wanted I knew that this story structure was going to be a little bit complicated because you do it was writing a second gen was such an experience because you're kind of like sitting there and you're like, well, I can't just like give her bad parents. Like, you
Right,
know
because I already
what
wrote their
I mean?
book.
And so, you know, you can't just like fall back on like parental trauma or be like, someone died. Like, you know what I
Well,
mean? And
because
so
then you're scarring anybody who read the first book, and it's like, oh no.
So I wanted to, but I needed Willow and Wes to have such different upbringings and be so polar opposite, but then be able to kind of see a reflection in each other and be able to bond over that. And I think that like Willow gives Wes a lot of stuff that he's missing. Like she does give him the support and the acceptance and the family. You know, they all like really show up for him and like give him what he's not had before. And I think he does that for her too. I think that he gives her a lot of space, and he gives her a lot of patience and he gives her a lot of reassurances and a lot of that like kind of like unconditional acceptance. And I think that's what they both have, a lot of understanding and patience and empathy for one another, even though they're so different. And I think that's how I knew that they were going to be like such a good pairing.
Well, and one thing I really like about their journey is Willow gives him little bits of like what's going on. Like she doesn't open up completely until she has to. And it's one of those things where he doesn't need everything. Like he wants her to come around and give him more, but when she is ready. And I think that is one of the my favorite things about this. And like same way, like West, like Willow knows little pieces, but she at one point in the book, she even says like she never looked up like what happened. Like she could have searched it, she could have done all that. She's like, but I didn't want to do that. Like I wanted to hear it from you, from the source, and experience it like with him as he was telling her. And I thought like that choice was fantastic because you don't always have that. Like you sometimes, and it's not that it's a wrong decision, but sometimes you have the hero or the heroine that push. And like there are some characters, they need that push. They need that like intensity. And but I think with these two, like the push would have been very like catastrophic for both of them.
I think and I think it really helped the dynamic between the families. So Wes's like foster parents or adoptive parents, they are actually the main characters from my very first book that I ever wrote. So they're kind of like a second gen, I guess, in a way too.
Ish.
I always knew that I wanted the series to kind of converge, but when I wrote my very first book, The Soulmate Theory, I knew that Carter and Penelope would not have kids. Like that was very intentional. When you like read Penelope's backstory in her book, like it makes sense. And but I did always kind of in the back of my head, I was like, I could see them being like foster parents or something because that's where she comes from. And I could see her kind of wanting to do that. And so it just kind of fell together really perfectly. But I also think that the relationship that they all have together gave Willow kind of a foundation of trust. Like I think that Willow knew. I also set up kind of this mentorship between Willow and Penelope. Actually, in like the epilogue of Heathen and Honeysuckle, there's a reference.
Okay.
That's when Willow gets introduced. Like their epilogue is like 15 years later, so she's like a teenager.
Okay.
She gets briefly introduced, and Willow or Leo like mentions that she's like a painter, and she works with one of their friends. And so that's kind of how I started to form the connection between the two series, Pacific Shores and my debut series. And so I think that that mentorship existing, like I think Willow kind of had this understanding, like they wouldn't have brought in a kid that they didn't see potential in or that they didn't have faith in. They
Right.
wouldn't still be taking care of him and loving him if he wasn't like worth, like if it wasn't like worth it, you know, or
Right.
if he wasn't like this redeemable person that, you know, deserved that. And then I think she knew like her dad would not be having someone like live on his property
Right.
if there wasn't. And she knew that her dad knew the whole story,
Yeah.
but Leo didn't think that it was his story to tell. And so I think that she had that foundation where she was like, you don't need to tell me everything right now because I know there's more to the story,
But the
but
people that I trust
trust
this.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that for Weston, because his story is so complicated and on the surface it looks so bad, when you don't know the nuances and don't know the history, I think for him that just naturally is going to give him a level of empathy that when Willow's like, I can't share everything right now, he's going to just inherently understand that because he knows what it's like to have so much more like brewing beneath the surface that you feel like you can't share or can't explain. There's so like he understands more than anyone that there are nuances to someone's past and that sometimes just like a blanket of information is not going to tell the story or like is not going to help you understand someone. And I think he also knew that Willow's experience and her trauma was very fresh and she was still trying to process it to where he's had like years in some forms to process what he's gone
Well, years to
through.
process some, not so much to process
Right,
others.
yeah, and I think that's like where the patience with them. I really, for me, it's like really important that my characters go to therapy because they need it.
Therapy is wonderful.
Right, so I do always try to incorporate that, but I also want to be realistic with it at the same time because it takes time to find the right therapist. A lot of people go in and out of therapy, or are very hesitant to start therapy because it's a scary thing to do.
It
And I
is.
also think that having patience, that I do see sometimes readers being like, this character needs therapy. I can't believe they're not in therapy. And sometimes it is simply that like the author didn't think to like have that, or like it just didn't like, but I think that when it's done in an intentional way, it makes sense sometimes. Like it takes people time to get to that place. And so, you know, you kind of have Weston's experience where he's been in and out and he's had several therapists and he's never found the right one and he's not going to therapy right now because he's just like kind of lost. And I think that that's totally like, does he need therapy? Absolutely. Will he need therapy probably for the rest of his life? Absolutely. But like, you're gonna, people go in and out. You get new therapists, you get different fits. Like, and then with Willow, this is very fresh for her. And it's most people don't go through what Willow goes through. And the very first thing that comes to mind is like, let me call a therapist. Like, that's not that it takes time. It takes time to get there. So, I wanted to really present that in a way. And I think that like, their different experiences through that healing process, him kind of being in this place for a longer period of time and having been in and out of therapy and having tried these different things, and hers being so fresh because at the end of the day, she did have like a pretty perfect childhood. She, you know, so like this is very new. She's never gone through something like this before. And I think that he gives her a lot of like patience and understanding because he's been through that already.
Well, and one thing you do, like you have, there's a scene between Willow and West, not Willow, but Leo and Weston, where Leo is talking about his past. And so they're similar, but not at the same time. Like there are parallels to their lives. And so I think, and like with Penelope and Willow, like there's a conversation there, and it's like, so like there's some parallels, not exact, but parallels. And I think Weston specifically really needed that conversation because he looks like, from the outside looking in, these are like a family who like are, it's an idyllic life. Like they're like the parents' relationship is great. Like their relationship with their daughter is great. But it, like, as he learns more, like the fact that Will, like Leo's past has some parallels to him, like their family relationship. There are some things in it, which the way I'm wording it is very complicated. But so, like, there's things that had happened in Leo and his wife's past, and like that produced Willow, and like that, like, she had some reservations about her decision because of that. And so it's like all
Yes.
these things, but like as he learns more, Weston sees like they may have a great relationship, but it has not been without issue. It has not been without hurt and trauma, like of their own.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then I knew that Leo and Wes, it wasn't necessarily like intentional, but as I started building Wes's like backstory, I was like, oh, this sounds a lot like someone else I know. And so I knew I wanted to like put that on page. And I think that like Weston idolizes him so much. At the beginning of the book, he talks about how like when he was a kid, he had posters of Leo on his wall and like stuff like that. I think this is such an idol to him. And then immediately, you know, kind of getting shut down as soon as he arrives and getting that like, you know, stay away from my daughter kind of thing. I think like Weston internalized that as like, oh, like yeah, no, I'm not good enough for her. I would never be good enough
Well,
for
and I
her.
think part of it is like how it happened too, because like Willow comes home unexpected. Leo is supposed to start coaching Weston for surfing, and like all of these, like her thing, like pops up. And so Leo, he's kind of
She's having a
frantic.
bad day.
He's having a bad day. And so it's like Weston shows up at not the best time. And so it's
Right.
like, and then he's like pawned off on another coach for the, like, for the surfing, which it's not that she's a bad coach. He just wasn't expecting it. And it's like, so that kind of like filters into his trauma. He's like, well, why am I here? Like, I thought I was doing this. Like, am I imposing? And so, but as he finds out, like, life kind of blew up and he just happened to show up at the wrong time.
And I think he really needs that. I think he really needed to know that, like, you know, I think Leo says at one point, like, I like you a lot and I don't hold your past against you in any capacity. It actually has nothing to do with you. And I think that like he really need and then that kind of is what pushes him into that mindset of like, okay, well, I'm gonna go after her anyway because like, you know, and he's like, I respect you, but actually, if she gives me a chance, I'm gonna take it, I fear, you know.
Well, and Weston talks about like how he feels like around her and how he hasn't had a lot of those feelings like really ever in the past, and like on like touch is something that he has issues with, but touching her, like, it kind of settles him. And so like being out on the ocean like that, it, on a board, like that is his like happy place, his safe space. But there's just something about her that creates almost that same feeling as him being like in the waves. And so I think that like parallel is really fun as well.
I think the parallel is really fun for people who have read Heathen and Honeysuckle because Heathen and Honeysuckle is a dual timeline second chance romance. So they meet each other when they're 17, and Leo has a lot of similar thoughts. So I think it's really cute to like see it fast forwarded so many years later, and then you get to kind of like see Weston have these same thoughts, but then you see Leo on like the other side of it,
And
and he's
he's
just
like,
like,
what is going on? But they call him
right.
out on that too. Like, there is a scene where they call him out and they're like, you knew. And he's like, well, you're right. I'm gonna,
Right.
but I don't want to admit it.
Right.
So, what's next for you? Or can you talk about it? Because since you are trad, I know there's all sorts of like things where sometimes you can talk about it, sometimes you can't, sometimes you can be vague and be like, things
Yeah,
are
no.
happening.
Yeah, no, I mean the second book in the Celestia Cove series comes out in September. So she's announced Sideline Souls. That one is coming out. I'm really excited. It is it follows the side character. So it follows Willow's cousin Archer and then her best friend Allie. And they're like a childhood friends, kind of like right person, wrong
Wrong time.
time kind of dynamic. That one's a football romance. So it's the only sport I've ever written about before is surfing. So this was like my dive into a new sport, which was really, really fun. And so I'm very, very excited for it. Where, you know, I had a call with my publisher just a little bit ago. It was a marketing call. We're like fully diving into Sidelined Souls now, so we're very excited. And then there will be four total books in Celestia Cove. So I'm currently writing the third book in the Celestia Cove series, which will follow Xander, her other cousin.
And
And then
Archer's twin.
yes, yeah, they're twins. So and then the last book in the series, which will come out next summer, will be Liv and Lou. So I guess Willow's last cousin, who's much they're much older, but they'll be getting a book as well.
So you're gonna go back in time. Ish, maybe.
Ish there it's gonna be a little bit it's gonna have flashbacks, but it will take place in the chronologically as well. It'll have kind of have a dual timeline.
Interesting, because they're already a set couple.
They are married. Yep. So,
I will say though, I love a marriage in crisis. Like, it is one of my
me too.
absolute favorite tropes, but it, and I'm super picky though, because it's hard to do it well.
I will say, I had a brief outline for what, like, when I pitched the series, their synopsis, because they were the last book, like, it was the least detailed. Because I was like, I want to do a book about them. I'll figure it out, basically,
Well,
is
and it
kind
kind
of
of depends on what changes in books one, two, and three,
yes.
like how it affects their story.
But I always had Marriage in Crisis in the back of my mind. It's one of my favorite tropes.
Love it. Love
And
it
I was
so
like,
hard.
I really, really want to tackle it. And again, it was kind of like one of those things where I was like, I'm gonna push it off for now because I know it's something I want to do, but I'm not there yet. So let me focus on these other books first. But as I get closer, because I will start writing that book later this summer, I was very inspired. I don't want to give too much away, but I was very inspired by a lot of the discourse that came out after Bridgerton announced that its next season would be sapphic. There was a lot of negative discourse that pissed me off, and a lot of people saying that certain themes from Francesca's book, which obviously is not a sapphic book, could not be effectively executed because she's going to end up with a woman. And when I saw that discourse, I said, okay, all right, well, you watch then. And that really motivated me. So now I have a very clear vision of what Liv and Lou's story is going to be. And I'm very excited to tackle that.
So Bridgerton, I love the book series. Love it. Benedict is my favorite, like Team Benedict all the way. I have not watched his season yet because I have hate watched and rage watched the last, like, season one was fine. It was fine. Season two made me very grumpy.
I've not read all of the Bridgerton books. I've actually only read Benedict's book, and then I've read Romancing Mr. Bridgerton, which was Colin and Penelope. Now, Colin and Penelope, like, that is one of my favorite books of all time. Like,
But the show is
favorite
so
books of all
different.
time.
Rage
I was
watched.
very upset with
Rage. Rage
the way
watched.
that Colin and Penelope's season was done. I was very happy with Benedict's. I will say that.
Oh,
I really
really?
enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. Colin and Penelope, they just did it so differently. And I know that there were, I knew it was going to be different because Whistledown is so different in the books. Like, she's not scandalous. She's like whimsical. And I, so
Well, my
I
thing is, you
knew
don't find out till their book, and we found out, like,
in
it's
season
just,
one, I think. Yeah.
yeah, it was like we knew, like, way sooner in the series.
And it was
Like,
so, she was so much more scandalous.
oh,
And so you knew that it
yes.
was gonna like ruin her.
Well, and the
And
whole Eloise, like, Penelope, like, fallout, like, I didn't love that.
yeah, I do feel like because of the falling out between Penelope and Eloise, it was a lot harder for them to capitalize on the best friend's brother trope, which would have been so much more fun. So I was just like, oh, like I just love like the pining for the best friend's brother who's off limits, the childhood friend, like all of the things. And so, but I really enjoyed Benedict's season. And then obviously we know in the books, Francesca, it's like a love after loss, but there's, you know, the kind of like the fertility stuff, or you know, that she couldn't. And so when they announced that it was going to be sapphic, there was a lot of discourse about that,
Which
people
is
saying some really
stupid.
negative things. And I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna.
I
So
will take
I was
that and
very
run with it.
inspired.
Well, that's, I am looking forward to that then. But no, I mean, that whole discourse, like, it just angered me. And it's also, I mean, I'm already angry about the seasons anyway. And that just made me madder because people are like, that's not how it goes. I'm like, have you read the books? Because none of it is how it goes.
Right. And I mean, we're
They need
seeing
to
that with
make it based on the books by, not like,
And I think we're seeing the same thing happen right now with like Off Campus. It just came out and
well,
people are
see, I
like, oh
have
my
not
gosh, it's
read
a
Off
different.
Campus.
I have. In fact,
I own a couple of the books, but I have not read them because, you know, you get the books and they just sit on your Kindle for years and years. Like, I've had it for like 4 years and it never been read.
I love them so much that Leo Graham is a namesake to Garrett Graham because Garrett Graham from The Deal was like my OG like book boyfriend. I loved him so much. I finished the series last night, the show. I thought it was great. A lot of the stuff that they adapted made sense,
Yeah,
like
that's
to
what I've been
me.
hearing. I mean, you have the people who are annoyed about it, but it's like it's a
I always try to like explain to people it is so hard to adapt because you cannot be in their head, I guess, unless you have voiceovers, which a lot of people don't like. So you cannot, it is so much more difficult to effectively showcase like longing, yearning, pining, crushing. It's so much more
Well, and
difficult to
not
do
everybody
that.
can do a Matthew McFadden hand like clench. So,
Right. And so it's like you're not inside their head and you're relying on the actors to show that through actions, through facial expressions, through which, and I think the actors in the show did a phenomenal job. I think that they were great. I think that the way that they adapted it is great. I think the way they're changing up the timeline to be able to run multiple the plots from multiple books at once
Well, that's the thing.
makes
Like, there's a
sense.
congruency to it that they've adapted. I mean, I know enough about the series, like, that I understand it. 'Cause I mean, being in the podcast, like, we study that kind of stuff. But it's like, if you
Right.
want it to be interesting, like, and that's the thing, too. It's not that, like, if you watch any adaptation, there is not a single adaptation ever
That's
created that
identical.
is it, like, exactly the same. 'Cause you figure even when they adapt, like, musicals into movies, like, there are changes, and it's like that's a production where, like, you wouldn't have to change anything, but they do. Like, there's not a single adaptation that stays exactly like 1,000% what the original was like. It's like, it is 2026, people. Just know adaptations have been around for many, many moons, and the book is always better, people. The book is always
That and
better.
like and it's not even like I was literally telling a friend that this morning. It's not even hate on the show or the quality of the show. I thought the show was so great and so fun, and I hope that it opens up so many people into wanting to pick up sports romances and read them because they love the show. But the book is always better because simply you can be inside, you know the characters 100 times better because you are in their head with them and you cannot fully adapt that. So it's just never going to be exactly the same. But I think it's so fun to watch and I love that we are giving more space to like media kind of adapted and created mostly for women. And I think that like we're, you know, like uplifting romance in any capacity, I just think is so wonderful. And it's going to expand reach and it's going to expand readerships because it's going to get people in who haven't read before and are going to enjoy and are going to hear the book is so much better. And now they're going to want to
And
go
they're to
read the
go read those
books.
books.
Yeah. So I just think it's lovely and wonderful. And I think they did a really good job. And, you know, at the end of the day, The Deal came out in 2015 and that was a very different political climate back then. So some of the really popular, famous like themes from the book just were not going to adapt to the show. And like, listen, we know, I know you haven't read it, but like Garrett Graham is very famous for his hands-off law. He tells the whole school that they're not allowed to talk to Hannah. And I can't lie, like in the book, I loved it. I love what crazy
But it's
possessive
hard to
man.
make like
But
put that into action.
that's not going to adapt on television well. And I think that the way that they did it in the show made complete and perfect sense. And I think it was really, it was still great. And I love knowing that that's kind of an aspect that gets to stay just the book. It gets to belong just to us who read the book and kind of understand it on a different level. Because on the surface, it is kind of problematic. I can understand
A little
why they didn't
bit.
want to adapt it.
I
So
mean,
like,
I love a red flag and a hero in a romance book. Like my husband is like the greenest flag ever, cinnamon roll of life. But like in my books, like they can be, I like a stalker. I like an asshole. I really
Yes.
enjoy a breeding kink where like there's very little consent in my books. Like, but
Right.
I would never, like, that is not something I would ever accept in my real life. Like,
Right.
I will read pretty much anything, but give me that in real life and we have some problems.
Right. And I think I love a possessive like alpha male type of
Yes.
character,
Like, do not touch
but
her. Like, have you read Neva Altai yet? She does mafia, and there is one of her heroes who is very possessive over his heroine. And at one point, he tells people that he will scoop their eyeballs out if they look at him. Look at her. He likes to scoop eyeballs. And so, again, not okay in real life, but scoop away in my books.
Right. And I think that when it comes to an adaptation, it is much closer to real life. You are
Yeah.
seeing real, living, breathing
So
human
there's some
beings
care and
act
caution that
out
has
these
to be.
characters. So there has to be a little bit of change. And I think it made perfect sense. I think the way they executed it was done really well. And I thought it was great. And I love knowing that there are aspects to the book that get to just stay part of
In
the
the
book and
book.
get to stay close to us who have read and loved the books for years.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on this author spotlight. It has been a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.